Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. It's been a while since I've been with you, and I'm glad to be back with you today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community, and I believe we will probably be as diverse as we've ever been from a musical standpoint today, but we'll get into that in a little bit. We want to look at how today's choices and today's decisions, along with what's going on in our community, affects what is happening in our daily life. And sometimes it's things we're well aware of. Sometimes it's things we have no real knowledge about. So we'll do our best to bring that together. We are going to talk about something that, by the way, I would prefer you not call in and say, Fred, how did you get stuck with this topic? Because you know nothing about it. And that's opera. So I start that out because it is in my defense that that I explain that so people will feel like my guests can really talk about this, and I will do my best to stay out of the way. We have an organization called Opera Slow or Opera San Luis Obispo. It is one of only four grand opera companies in the state of California, and we'll talk about maybe the other three at some point. And I have my guest today. Are the artistic director and one of their singers and one of their board members who is also a singer. And hopefully if time permits and we get the logistics worked out, we have a guest calling us from out of the area who is also performing. And the first time we've ever done a program like this where my narrative from the guests includes which ones are tenors, sopranos, and baritones and things like that, because I have to tell you, quite honestly, I could not define what a tenor versus a soprano is specifically, which has to do with my limited knowledge of opera and music in general, which is good because in most cases people just ask me not to sing. Brian, you're the artistic director. Why don't we start and introduce yourself, and let's talk about what in the world we are doing with a serious opera company in San Luis Obispo County.
I'd be happy to talk about that, but I'm just wondering if we should start with you singing first.
No. No. You know, Brian, I knew I could get – we've met before, and we've had some social contacts, and I knew that if there was a chance you could make this crazy, you would do it. In spite of being an incredibly gifted musical director and conductor and an opera aficionado, you're also considered an interesting fringe character in the music community around here. So,
well, thank you. And I want to just express my gratitude to you, Fred, and KCBX for having us here today to talk about, Opera San Luis Obispo and what we're doing here in the community and this exciting grand production of the musical of musicals, America's Tune, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, actually, I want to interject because we talked about when we send a questionnaire out to you folks, mm-hmm. we ask you what you'd like to have the program named today. And I have to tell you that Gabriel, who's not on the phone with us yet, but we'll hopefully get him on the phone in a little bit, he actually named this – you actually said that a citywide arts collaboration coming to San Luis Obispo. He actually named it and this actually it kind of affected my feeling that it's serious music, but we don't have to necessarily take everything about it seriously, because he suggests that we should refer to the program as Slocahoma.
Slocahoma, oh, yeah. That's right. What a great idea. They did mention that before, and absolutely. And Oklahoma, of course, deals with the agricultural themes attributed to cowboys and farmers, and so that's a very prominent sort of subject here on our highly agriculturally based Central Coast.
Okay. Well, okay, I have kind of a starting point, because I believe this is probably the question of all questions when it comes to this topic, and that is a musical or a 20th century musical and an opera, even though they are both musical productions of information and theater, are different. So how is it that we are doing an opera production of Oklahoma, or are we doing an musical theater production of Oklahoma that happens to be being done by an opera company?
It's sort of close to what you just said. Well, but actually, in a conversation,
I would never go with that. By the way, but okay, go ahead.
just the other day, in my office, I was having a conversation with Amy Goymerek, and she so eloquently said, "What we're really doing here is we're throwing the resources of a grand opera company at a musical theater production. So we are producing Oklahoma in every expectation of a musical that you would have upon entering a theater. However, with the expanded resources of an opera company."
So how is an opera different? I mean, there may be six people in the audience who have never been to an opera or heard an opera or seen an opera.
Right.
And three of those people may have never been to a musical. But for most people, they've been to both. But to try and correlate the differences or the similarities for the average person, mm-hmm. I guess that means dumb Fred in this case.
No.
How do we see them differently and how they fit together?
Mm-hmm.
And should we let James?
Yeah.
He's the educator.
Absolutely. Okay. I'd love to hear how people talk about
this. I see that there's more similarities between opera and musicals than we think. The stereotype of an opera is, you know, the big lady with the horns on, bellowing away on the mountaintop. But if you think of Cats, if you think of Sound of Music, I mean, these are big productions with difficult vocal ranges in them, and that's what you'll experience in opera. So you see the similarities between the two. And multi-ages, you have theater, you have dance, you have drama, you have love. And they're not all about someone dying. There's a lot of happy opera. Several of the pieces that prior to Gilbert and Sullivan coming in, there was a fine line between serious opera and then Gilbert and Sullivan's light opera. So Les Miserables is that almost sits on the fence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you brought up a couple of interesting points when you talk about like Gilbert and Sullivan, which I have not thought of that as an opera, but it really is a light opera discipline. Okay. For me, the biggest difference with opera is I need to read the opera beforehand if it's not in English, or I'm not going to be able to follow the presentation. And I think that's a big factor. Most opera, for those of us who are not opera followers on a regular basis, are indeed in a foreign language. And so therefore, the grandiose presentation of the material becomes a real big factor in the opera, as opposed to just the conveyance of the storyline. And I'm wondering, does that – so when you do something like Oklahoma, how do you see it differently, or is it not seen differently for you than a regular opera?
Well, I would go with what Dr. Brescia sort of said. There are many more similarities between musical theater and opera. However, the similarities and that close relationship really exists in musicals that were written between 1930 and about 1970. And that's what we're seeing is, as history goes forward, many of the older musicals, those between 1930 and 1970, have much more in common logistically, melodically, overall with the production of an opera than, say, the next generation of musicals. So if we look at the similar ones, we have, you know, Oklahoma, West Side Story, South Pacific, you know, Showboat, those kind of musicals. They required a large orchestra. They had a very large chorus ensemble. They have a considerable dance element, and the stories require large, expansive sets and very detailed and precise period costumes. Those are almost the characteristics of an opera, if I were to be talking to you about opera. Now, if we take a look at the musicals from the last 20 years, you know, Avenue Q, Rent, maybe 30 years, what was the Hamilton, which is very recent and then going on right now, these musicals have sort of condensed to a much different kind of style and really sort of they've taken a different track from what musical theater started off with.
Well, I would observe as a layman and, as I said, kind of the fool in this discussion, that that most musicals I would not classify as being nearly like an opera. But I, to some extent, I'd have to observe as a layman that Rent really struck me more as a modern opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it struck me more as a modern opera because it included more struggle of personalities in the production. But that may not be the right way to classify opera.
Rent definitely has a much more dramatic sort of slant to it than some musicals. However, if you look at and of course it depends on how you look at it, but I look at it from a logistical standpoint, the orchestral forces behind Rent is about a six-piece rock band. And then everybody in Rent is a triple threat. They have to sing, they have to act, they have to dance, and they have to be outstanding in all areas of that. And then, of course, the similarities. Well, Rent, of course, is based from La Boheme, another sort of version of even West Side Story to a certain degree. So there, you're right. Rent is more of pivotal in that nature. What do you guys think, Amy? You're our resident artist here, and you're definitely for performing on stage in musicals and operas. How do you sort of characterize this difference?
Well, you know, sometimes when it's like you'll know it when you see it. Kind of like when you're looking at a musical and you go to see Legally Blonde or Shrek or something, you say, okay, this is obviously a musical. And then you go see The Lady with the Horns, and you see Brunhilde singing, and it's Wagner, and you think, okay, this is obviously an opera. So those are the two kind of, you know, those are on the far ends of the spectrum, but it really is a gray area in between that. And as you go through the history books, you get to something like Porgy and Bess, which is done by opera companies and musical theater companies, and there's really no, that's really kind of a pivotal piece. People don't, you really can't classify it one way or the other. You could say it's both, really. And really, it's all story set to music. And you said that a lot of times you think of opera as just being in another language, which it often is. But there are operas written in the 18th century that are written in English, and in the 19th century written in English. There are, you know,
right. Go see De Fledermaus, and you can see that in English, and that would be a very good introductory opera for someone to see. It's on the lighter side, and then maybe see
Marriage. Was it written originally in English?
German, I think, initially, but the translation to English, it's very well done. It's fun. I've been in that before, and it's a very exciting opera, but on the light side.
Yeah. I want to interject first and remind our listeners, we are talking about opera, SLO, and we'll get into the part about the fact that we're actually talking about opera SLO and a musical production of Oklahoma in a little bit. But I want to remind you also, this is a discussion you can be part of if you'd like. The phone number here is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. You do not need to call and specifically make sure I don't sing. We've already agreed that that's not going to happen. And Jim Brescia, who, by the way, happens to be our county superintendent of schools, if you didn't catch that, is a board member of the Opera SLO and a tenor. And he will talk about music today. He's graced us without talking about education, so we promised him we could stay away from that for the moment. Amy, give us a little bit about your background.
Well, let's see. I started out doing musical theater, actually, in high school. My first musical was Les Miserables my freshman year of high school. And I did musicals all the way through. And then I came to Cal Poly as a philosophy major because everyone was telling me to do music. And I said, no, I'm going to do what I want. Not that I necessarily wanted to do philosophy, but I just wanted to pick something else. Then a couple years later, I decided I am incomplete without music. And I discovered classical singing. I started studying with a teacher at Cal Poly, Jacqueline Kreitzer. And then, you know, after two or three years of studying and working with another teacher up in Sacramento, I went to the Conservatory, San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And I've been doing classical singing primarily for the last 8 years or so. And this will be my third production with Opera San Luis Obispo, my first one being Suor Angelica in 2011 as a Cal Poly student, and then just last fall, Madama Butterfly.
How do we define resident artist?
a resident artist with Opera San Luis Obispo is a local singer, a local opera singer who does outreach performances, recitals on behalf of the opera company, and also gets to understudy larger roles in the productions and do smaller roles.
However, you're breaking through.
However, I will be breaking through and not understudying.
Amy is being very modest. She actually is our first resident artist to be given a leading role. She's quite outstanding. I remember her in 2011 when she did Suor Angelica. She was just one of the lay nurses on the stage, and I couldn't tell you anything about her voice, but something happened when she left San Luis Obispo, went to the San Francisco Conservatory, and she's really something else. She'll be singing the lead in Magic Flute this October, the role of Pamina, and also with another one of our resident artists from Atascadero, Dr. Alba Franco Cancel, who'll be singing the Queen of the Night.
So that brings an interesting element to this, though. You are what we would classify as a serious professional musician.
Mm-hmm.
We are blessed in the case of James that his day job is not music. Not that that would be any problem, but those of us who know you appreciate the fact that you're our county superintendent of schools. So I'm wondering, where does the casting for this kind of production come from? Because I'm sure it's not like a light couple hours a week once you get rolling on getting a production going.
Oh, no. I mean, I dabbled in opera while I was in college and community theater, and it is a big commitment. Even to participate as a chorister is a large commitment. So I can't imagine the time you're spending as a professional doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's kind of a line that you cross. There are much smaller opera companies that you can have a day job and they only rehearse at night and on the weekends. And I've done a lot of work with those types of companies. But then once you cross over that line, you get to bigger companies like Opera San Luis Obispo. You have to be able to commit 3 weeks of your life full time in town and be available 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. pretty much for rehearsals all around the clock. And not just for rehearsals, but for outreach performances and for costume fittings and for everything. So it's a leap. It's a leap of faith. You really drop everything, and so you can, you know, follow the dream.
Well, thank you. And I think it would have to be somewhat overwhelming because you're not doing a new opera every week, but you're doing an incredibly amount of intense work together to bring it together. And we are a reasonably small community. Brian, we can talk about the fact that there are only three other opera companies in the state of – or three other what we would call serious opera companies. That may not be the correct vernacular.
There's a lot of serious opera companies in the state of California, and those that are at much larger budgets than we have. The difference between a grand opera producing company and any other company is one where we enter the theater and there are no cuts to anything. So if the composer required an 80-person orchestra, we have that in the pit. If there is ballet in the – you know, okay. All those different aspects. Okay. But some of the other companies have and we're seeing that a lot, where they're shrinking in order to produce smaller, less expensive productions at different venues.
So we're looking at four opera companies at this level in the state of California.
Yes.
You, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and I believe in San Diego. Is that
yes.
correct? Okay. So those are the other three communities.
We're the new kids on the block.
Well, not only the new kids on the block, there's the size of the communities and the surrounding communities for the other three companies give them a tremendous level of assets that we may not get in a county like this. I'm sure you have some very good local benefactors, but it's still a small community.
We do, and even though it's small, one of the great things about San Luis Obispo is that all of the components that are required to produce opera at a grand scale are here and thriving. So we have several orchestras. We have several choruses. There are many dance organizations. There are a variety of venues, and the staff of those venues that populate throughout the Central Coast. So we have all the resources here to really make opera grand, and especially of all things, the most important thing is the house to perform it in. And the Performing Arts Center San Luis Obispo, it's a 1,300 seat modern theater built on the European sort of style of opera houses. And what makes it sort of unique is it's literally anything can be produced at the Performing Arts Center without any sort of limitation. And the only other theaters that we can sort of experience that are the Soroyan Theater in Fresno. We have to go all the way down to Los Angeles' Dorothy Chandler to find a venue like that. Mm-hmm. And then all the way north to San Francisco's War Memorial to find a venue on that scale. So we really are blessed to have the Performing Arts Center here.
And that is expensive, too.
It's absolutely one of our, I would say, between a fourth to an eighth of our production cost is the venue facility.
How many productions do you put on a year?
We do two major productions, main stage productions. We do a grand musical in the spring, Mother's Day weekend always, and then a fall grand opera, usually the second weekend of October. And then throughout the year, we have a variety of other events that are sort of on the fringe / innovative. We have a wonderful relationship with the County Offices of Education. We produce a children's concert at the Vina Robles Amphitheater for 3,400 North County kids, which is truly an exciting event. We also do a Boston Pops pop concert at the Vina Robles Amphitheater during the summertime. The orchestra comes out in their Hollywood Bowl whites. And then, of course, we're in the community doing outreach at schools and retirement communities, other service organizations. So we have a very wide sort of reach, and we try and make sure that all of our diversity still reaches an impact threshold that's valuable. So we're not just saying, oh, we have an educational component. We really do have an educational component that's quite impactful here in the community.
Opera as a discipline is in a lot of cases getting there are a lot of communities that have had operas that can't support them anymore. There's lots of operas that are not – I mean, even the Met has had trouble financially. And the flip side is we also have things – example is, you know, you can go to a movie theater in San Luis Obispo County on a reasonably regular basis and see a live feed of Metropolitan Opera. Mm. I don't know if that helps what you folks do, or that gets in the way of what you folks do.
Well, I would say that that's the same as going to the theater. You can see a movie, but then you can see a live production at the theater or listening to live music. I was fortunate enough to see La Boheme in Los Angeles at Chandler and also see it at the PAC and SLO with Opera San Luis Obispo, and the performances were on par. I mean, the performance here was on par with what was produced at Chandler, and it is more enriching than seeing it on the film. The film is wonderful, and the opportunity to go sit in a live theater and have exposure to that is wonderful. But the experience in person, to see the orchestra, to see the musicians, to experience that, it is different, and it's the same as seeing live theater. You can go see a production of Carousel live, or you can watch the movie of it. Even though, you know, we all love to see Shirley Jones, it's just different.
Or even a ball game, for that matter. I mean, you know, we all have a great time watching a ball game on television, and we have an equally valuable and different experience watching it in the stadium.
Good point. Yeah. Hold on a second. I think we meant to have Gabriel with us. Let me see what we can do here. Gabriel, are you there? Can you hear me? Okay, we don't have him yet. Have him on this end.
Can you hear me?
There you are. You there now?
Hold on. I'm talking to you. I hear you.
Okay. Hey, there
you are. Yay, welcome.
Hi.
Sorry about the fact technology got in the way of this. This is Gabriel Manro, and he is a baritone. You probably missed the part of the program where I basically confessed to the fact that I could not identify what a baritone, a tenor, and a soprano were by listening to them. And we talked about my limitations with regard to understanding of opera. I am more of a folk music Americana guy. And I love opera, but know very little about it. I also confess to the fact that if I go to an opera, the best thing I should do first is read at least a good synopsis of it, if not the entire story, so I'll know what's going on. But Gabriel, since you're in the discussion now, and I can't bring you up completely to where we were with the earlier discussion, can you share with us what your role in this, and I mean role not in the defined character you're playing, but your role as far as a part of this organization and what brings you to it?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've known Brian and Meister Alhadoff and I have known each other for a long time, and actually have known of each other. In fact, the first time that we came in contact was when Meister Alhadoff was conducting, I think, in Czechoslovakia. Is that correct?
We didn't work together in the Czech Republic, did we?
We never did, but contacted me about it.
Trying to bring you there, and you were busy.
That's right. Busy.
Okay.
And then there's a big audition here on the West Coast. It used to be called the West Coast Auditions, and I come in contact with Meister Alhadoff a couple times there, and we talked afterwards. But many, many years passed, and my actually first interaction with Opera Serenus Obispo was when Meister Alhadoff asked me to sing a role in Carmen, but I was not available, so I recommended somebody else. So my first interaction really was recommending another really very good singer that Maestro was really impressed with. And then I next contracted the organization does several,
recital
fundraisers per year.
You did the That's Amore in 2016.
That's right. That's Amore in 2016. I contracted that with myself and three other very, very wonderful singers that then Maestro was so impressed with that he cast us all, almost all of us, in the next production of Cavalleria Rusticana and I Pagliacci. So over many, many years, I actually didn't appear in an actual opera
episodes, but had some interaction. Gabriel, I'm going to interrupt for a second. If you're on a hand cell phone, if you can make sure you hold the mouthpiece a little closer to your mouth, we're getting some distortion.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You know what I'm going to do? Would it be better to be on speakerphone?
Generally it would not, because you tend to cut in and out if we happen to step on the call.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I'll see you.
We're doing
fine. I'll try
no
to get
problem.
My mouth closer. Okay. Maestro and I also did a summer production with the summer festival in Fresno, and that's when he first proposed the idea of coming and seeing Oklahoma, which I then told him the story of when I was at Atascadero High School and auditioned for Oklahoma. It was the
so
first
this is really important.
Auditioned for.
Gabriel, we have to let our audiences know that you're essentially a local, you're returning. This represents full circle for you, right?
That's right. It's full circle. That was the time of my life when I decided, when I first auditioned for Oklahoma, it was when I decided that I wanted to be a professional musician/singer. So I was all geared up to get the lead in the show, but I did not get the lead in the show. I got cast as a very, very small speaking role.
Wait, now, didn't you tell me that the role that they gave you, it wasn't even a real role? They made it up to be inclusive, right?
The story's kind of funny. The only lines I had, it was the role of Slim, but pretty much all my lines were cut. Except for a couple at the very, very end of the show, which sounded like it was just added for a high school production. But actually, I looked in the score when I looked in recently. Actually, that was an original line from the Broadway show. I don't know. I think at the time I always had this idea that on Broadway they would have horses on stage and everything. But apparently, in the original show, there were not horses on stage. And the line I had was, let's take Curly and Laurie in the Surrey, and we'll be the horses, you know, the guys, the men. So actually in this production, the men are also...
If it's any consolation, as you're saying this, if it's any consolation, I'll remind you that in some rather famous movies that I won't go into a lot of details on, there have been some rather very good, well-known actors that ended up being nothing but a pair of feet in a casket in a movie after things were cut out of it. So it does indeed happen, and you were still a living character.
Boy, well, thank you. Thank you very much. That feels good. I have to, that, you know, after my audition, the theater teacher came up and said, "Wow, you know, you have a really great voice. If you weren't such a goofball, he'd probably cast you in a bigger role." It was my, the talent was there. It was my maturity was not there. And there's actually several other stories about that show with me trying to upstage other actors and stuff like that. I didn't have any experience. I didn't have any idea of how one should forward the story. You know, I was just a class clown, and so I would just make people laugh. I would make the audience laugh when they weren't supposed to be laughing, etc. So
it's interesting
now,
you'd say that. You'd
be,
well, let me interject. It's interesting you would say that, because the part of the program you didn't hear before we had you on the air was that I would have preferred we use your suggested title both for this radio program today and for the production, which was Slowclahoma.
Isn't that brilliant?
That is truly brilliant. Yes, okay. And I would suggest for future observation, as someone who does marketing in some cases, that a catchy title as ridiculous as Slowclahoma might actually sell more tickets than Oklahoma the Musical. So it's hard to tell. So yes, please don't give up the part of you that's a colorful character.
Oh, I won't. In fact, you know, the last show that Brian and I did together was a Cinderella in Fresno, and man, did I have fun.
He was a real ham on that stage. We worked with a director that sort of just gave him carte blanche to do whatever he wanted, and boy, Gabriel just ate that up, and it was a wonderful production.
Okay. Well, I'm a little concerned, because I can tell you that Dr. James and Amy are sitting here wondering why in the world the conversation has gone this far off the cliff. But I think this is important to me, because I think what this really conveys maybe to a lot of our listeners is that there is a perception among a lot of people that whenever you use the word opera, it actually translates into a serious and stuffy – my word, not yours, stuffy presentation. And it doesn't have to be that. And in most cases, it isn't that.
Yeah.
But it's a balancing act.
And that's really our one of our biggest challenges right now, is to sort of redefine and sort of recharge our patrons and communities to not look at opera as the five-letter word in classical music. You know, it really is the Olympics of classical music. It's where all of the arts converge together on one stage like no other art form can happen. It truly is fantastic. We don't have people that come to our productions and leave saying, "Oh my goodness, why did I do that? I could have been at a movie tonight. I should have been watching Netflix." It's quite the opposite.
That's certainly understandable too. Before we get a little further into this, let me go. We have a caller, and Brian just looked at the screen and went, "Oh, okay." Anyway, so Charlie from Lompoc, why don't you jump on in this conversation? And Brian's heading for the door.
Okay, hey, Brian, I want to say hi to Brian before he goes.
Hey there, buddy. How are you doing?
I've enjoyed working with him over the years. In terms of operas, some of the some of our musical theaters, such as Man of La Mancha, Fiddler on the Roof, Carousel, are really of almost operatic scope.
Absolutely, Charlie. You're absolutely right.
And I understand when Porgy and Bess came out, George Gershwin wanted that to be the great American opera. And my understanding, it was too heavy for Broadway, and too light for the opera stage.
Yes, I think I've heard that story as well.
Now it's become an operatic standard. I don't know if I actually saw it. I think Leontine Price played Bess in one of the productions for the Met.
Oh, I'd love to hear that recording.
Okay, look at Miss Saigon and Madame Butterfly are absolutely the same story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good
point. In fact, I think you and I, when we did Madame Butterfly, I think you and I talked about it. I know I talked about with your predecessor, Ashens, on the parallels between Madame Butterfly and Miss Saigon.
Yeah, I believe you did write an extensive paper on that too, Charlie.
Yes, I did, quite enlightening. For class. I mean, and just scene by scene, character for character. One of the main differences between opera and theater is the vocal range, the size of the orchestra and the range of the vocal range of the singers.
Right, absolutely. It's a very important characteristic.
Yeah, and also I think the what I've also heard in some of the conversations that opera has more in common with musical theater than with symphonic music.
Yeah, I think I think when I was in San Francisco listening.
As a layman, I'd even agree with that. Even though I've already professed to be the fool in the room on this topic, I would still agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, really great. I'm just really absolutely delighted that we have a first class regional opera company. This area.
Okay. Charlie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Catch you later.
Brian stayed in the room.
Right.
Yeah. So why Oklahoma?
Well, I would bring it back to there are a number of musicals that are so closely related to the logistical components of opera. And if we think about Oklahoma, it was written in 1943. There's a number of reasons. It's actually the 75th anniversary of Oklahoma's premiere this year, which is exciting. But also, Oklahoma is one of those perfect pieces that I could rattle off song titles, Fred, and as I tell you the title, the melody will come to mind before you have to even think about it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, in some cases, actually, the next song on the album will come up in my head, too.
Yeah, so, for example, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning.
Okay.
You know how that goes, right?
No, I will not sing.
You don't have to sing.
Oh, What a Beautiful Day. Yes, okay.
People will say we're in love. You know what that sounds like. I Can't Say No.
That one I don't remember, but okay.
It'll come back.
Surrey with the fringe on top.
That's true. Okay.
You know, good. So the Farmer and the Cowman, the title song, Oklahoma, these are all very, very popular works that immediately evoke a melodic reaction by most people.
Actually, I have to confess, they evoke a different reaction, too, and that is, as you've just done that, I realized that the first musical I ever probably went to as a pre-teenager was indeed Oklahoma at the Dorothy Chandler.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was
well, if it was at the Dorothy Chandler, you experienced it at grand proportions.
Yeah, it was quite an amazing performance, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a tie. For me at the time, it was a tie between that and Hello, Dolly as to what were the largest things I'd ever seen in theater.
Yeah. The crossover as well, some of the visual impact of this production. I mean, he comes out on the horse. If you even think of the film production right there, that was a change where you have a soloist coming out, sorry, as opposed to the big choral or the dance moves in this. The integration of it wasn't just the Follies with the kick and the ruffle, but there are large scale dance productions in this and a lot of choreography and really Oklahoma marked the change in that musical theater, which really butts up close to what you would see with opera.
Yeah. My recollection, and I don't have a real studied memory of this, is that Oklahoma actually seems to have less non-musical dialogue than most of the musicals of its era.
non-musical dialogue.
Okay. So you didn't rely on as much fill conversation as you do in a lot of theater.
I would have to respectfully disagree a little bit. There's a lot of dialogue. In fact, we've had to sort of employ
some
cuts.
You don't need to be respectful.
There's a lot of dialogue. And what's it like, Amy and Gabriel? I mean, tell me, how do you feel about the dialogue and what's it?
I'm really excited about it. Actually, my character has more dialogue than singing by herself. Cool. And it's actually, as an opera singer, I don't often have dialogue. Most opera.
Let me just interrupt for one moment. So Amy, for your listeners out there, she's playing the role of Gertie. And you may and Gabriel Manro is playing the leading role of Curly. So their relationship is that Curly is in love with Lori, but Gertie has always had this crush on Curly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Gabe, I don't think we've ever met before, but it's nice to meet you on the radio for the first time.
Nice to meet you.
I play the role of Gertie Cummings, and she kind of tries to thwart the, you know, Curly and Lori are meant to be, and almost everyone in the town knows it, but right. I try to sneak my way in there and mess things up. And
a typical underlying theme in a lot of musicals.
Do you do the obnoxious laugh?
I have the obnoxious
laugh.
Can
we get a preview of your obnoxious laugh?
I might break your microphone if I do that, because I've been practicing it at home, and my dog, who is like deaf, she jumps out of her bed and scratches at the door to get out because she hates it so much. So it'll fill the pack nice and loud.
That's great.
But anyway, I look forward to the dialogue because a lot of times I don't have dialogue as an opera singer. A lot of operas are sung through completely, and dialogue really gives you a chance. Not that you don't have to give all of your, you know, acting potential while you're singing, but you're singing and acting at the same time. And when you have dialogue, you're just acting. And so it's almost a slightly altered version of your art form. You really have to pronounce. You can't hide behind your good singing. You know, you really have to bring your character out.
It's also, I would say, with opera, it's very hard to be physically monochromatic. You cannot stand there, I believe, and do a serious opera piece and not get physically, emotionally involved in what you're singing.
Well, you can, but no one will like it, and they'll get.
I don't know how you can. I can't imagine physically doing it.
No, it's, you really. Yeah. I mean, opera is so powerful and so moving, and the music rips your heart out in so many different ways, or makes you want to jump up and down and dance. And you can't just stand there like a statue and sing. You have to bring the emotion to it.
Yeah. James,
That's a huge difference between when you're learning, you know, lyrics to music or learning dialogue, is that it's oftentimes, especially when it's a masterpiece like Oklahoma or any great operas, it's the emotion and the music is already there. It kind of carries you. You know which direction to take it. It almost has its own thrust. And it almost makes choices for you. But when you have dialogue, you can take it. It's even more creative because there's nothing there already taking it in a direction. It's that you could take it in almost, except for, you know, the meaning of the words, yes, but you could, there's a thousand different ways that you can deliver a line as opposed to a lyric, which is a little bit more constrained. So it's actually more, I find it more difficult and more creative.
Absolutely, Gabe. And I just want to piggyback on that. A lot of people have asked me, what is it like to produce an opera versus producing a musical? And make no question about it that it is much more difficult to produce a musical than it is to produce an opera. There are a lot more technical and logistical challenges that we just don't have to deal with in opera.
Okay. I would suggest, though, that we should not see slow opera as being an easy way out of doing musicals. I mean,
no way.
Yeah, because it's a very involved process.
It's exciting to challenge the company to those.
James, as an educator and at the, and I'm not being sarcastic when I say this, an educator at the very top of the education mound we have in this county. How do you see this kind of thing in fitting in with the educational process? I know you've done some things with students out at Dina Robles that Brian was talking about, and you have the Children's Choir, I believe, of San Luis County involved in this project too. So how do you tie other organizations in?
I see my office as a convener or a hub to bring arts organizations into our schools. And the partnership with Opera San Luis Obispo has been a blessing in that we've been able to bring a lot of music in an enriching sense to North County, to the area as well as throughout the rest of the county. I see it as an obligation that we need to fulfill in education where we promote the arts. Unfortunately, especially during the recession, so many of our arts programs were just devastated.
Yeah.
And I'm pushing and advocating that they be enhanced and restored and partnered with the community. We have such talent in San Luis Obispo County in any of the art forms. We need to do a better job partnering and capitalizing on that.
Yeah, I am surprised at how little art we are able to fit into our schools now. I was very startled a number of years ago, moved up here and had a child and was thinking about, gee, there wasn't much in the way of music programs at the schools. And I to this day remember the fact that my mom sent me an article out of an L.A. newspaper about the fact that the high school I went to in Los Angeles, which had always had a large music program, had a band director who was a part-time band director who was a senior at the school, because the only way they could have a band was if they had some kind of role like that. So that's going back 30 years ago that happened. So our ability to integrate arts into our schools has been a difficult struggle for decades now.
Right, and I do see a renaissance of that in San Luis Obispo County. I see the school districts taking an active effort in promoting the arts, and I see organizations, the Clark Center, the Performing Arts Center, Vina Robles, Cafe Musique, I mean, I can list them, every art association, the museum here in San Luis Obispo. They're trying, and I want to encourage these organizations to do that. The partnership with Brian and with Opera Slow has really been a model, and I've shared it even with the governor's office. These are ways in which local organizations and school districts can partner and stretch dollars. I mean, we've been fortunate. We've had a couple of very generous donors that have helped fund this, along with, let's say, Vina Robles saying, we will let you use this facility. And we filled it with 3,400 school-age children.
It's wonderful.
And got them singing, too.
That's not going to include me.
Okay. I'd also like to speak to this. The profound influence that San Luis Obispo County school system had on me when I was in second grade, the public school at Santa Rosa Elementary provided free violin lessons from Lowell Davis, who was the conductor of the youth symphony in San Luis Obispo, and which I then went on and played in the youth symphony. And this really started my love of music and getting me involved in music and becoming very, very interested and pursuing that. And I joined the choir, and then I was in the All-State Honor Choir, and it really expanded my... you know what it really does is it expands an individual's their music catalog or their understanding or their appreciation of many, many different types of music. Because some people go to an opera and they can't really hear it. It's like when somebody goes and hears jazz, they may not, it's not part of their repertoire. But I was so influenced when I was in high school, I was in the All-State Honor Choir, and the first year I was in, we did a Stravinsky Symphony of Psalms, and it was, and you just, it deepens this love for a variety of of musical forms.
We're getting towards the end of the program, and as I usually do, I try and give my guests a couple of minutes to share their thoughts and observations, and get and kind of get out of their way. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to start with you, Gabriel. But I have one. I want to interject a question that you may be able to put in here, and that is of the music you haven't done. Can you share with us as part of your closing remarks what you'd like to do, regardless of the logistics or the cost, to perform in that you've never had the opportunity for? What's on the top of your bucket list for that? And my other guests are going to get the same question, so I'm not just singling you out.
What I've never performed in? I think that this is going to be really funny, because here I'm talking about extreme of complex and beautiful music, art forms. And I'm thinking, oh, you know what? I'd just love to be in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway.
That's not an unreasonable observation.
It's the classic kind of cliche, what's your favorite opera? Oh, Phantom of the Opera is my favorite opera. You know, and we kind of laugh at that because it's not really an opera, and it's kind of, but it's fabulous, you know. So I think maybe I kind of gravitate towards something more, more prosaic or colloquial or whatever you want to, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, thanks very much, and appreciate you being able to join us, James.
Yeah.
You're up next. I'll stay out of your way for 2 minutes.
Well, I want to thank San Luis Obispo County for coming together and partnering in the arts with the schools. And what Gabriel was describing right there was someone in the community giving their time to work with the school to promote the arts. That's what I want to encourage, and that's what I see, and that's what I'm hopeful for, whether it is visual art, whether it is dramatic art, whether it's theater, or whether it is the granddaddy opera, where they all come together. That's really what I see, and I see that as one of my callings, my mission here as your county superintendent, to promote that. Studies have shown that individuals who are engaged in the arts do better, not only in their profession, in whatever field they choose, but they're more balanced in life. It really is. It's just another form of exercise, if you think about it, another form of balance in life. And the production question, I would love to be the Lord High Executioner in the Mikado. Maybe that's the big hatchet there. I've got some little lists. No,
that's actually... I'd gladly pay to go see you do that.
Oh, it would be so much fun.
I would buy that ticket,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I would. Okay. And we would have to have an announcement. We have to let people who didn't know that you were the superintendent of schools before you did that role.
There you go.
That would be that would be a very good choice, yeah. Anyway, Amy.
So my answer to the question is kind of like Gabriel's as well, because there are a ton of soprano roles that are on my list. And, you know, there's a lot of Mozart. There's like Mozart Handel on there. There's some Strauss on there. There's like a lot of roles. I'm early on in my career, and so there's a lot I want to do. But the thing that really came to mind that I would love to do, and I don't know if I ever will because I really have very little dance background, is to tap dance in something like Thoroughly Modern Millie on Broadway, or
wow,
like some kind of old-fashioned...
How neat.
Like, isn't there tap dancing in like South Pacific or like old-fashioned musicals like that? Like just like the Fred Astaire like dance duo. Yeah. That would be like the dream, but I need to start now with tap dancing lessons because I'm way behind.
Anyway, it comes to my putting on the Ritz, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the
great thing about tap, though, is that you can continue to do tap until almost you're in your grave. You know?
Yeah,
you see, like,
that's my
very,
plan.
Very,
that's my plan.
You know, elderly.
Yeah, actually, cardio fitness for tap dancers is good. So that's something
that'll
that you can do it a lot longer.
That'll
than
be
that
me.
Too. Yeah, that'd
yeah.
be a factor. Okay. Brian, you've got it. And you know what we haven't done, and I got reminded by our production folks, is we haven't talked about the exact dates of this production. So please talk about that also. Oh, you want a reminder of what they are? I'll give you back my cheat sheet. Okay.
Well, you know, we do have this fantastic production. You can buy tickets right now. It's Oklahoma, Mother Mother's Day weekend, I couldn't personally couldn't think of a better gift to my own mother, so I figured I'd program it for the entire community. May 12th, 2 p.m. and 7 o'clock, and then May 13th, that's Sunday, Mother's Day, May 13th at 2 p.m. You can get tickets right now online at www.pacslo.org or call, pick up the phone, 805-756-4849.
And for the few listeners who maybe have not been to the PAC, I can't imagine that's the case, but there's, I'm sure, somebody out there. It is probably the most incredible venue that we have near us at all for live musical theater. It is just an amazing – the acoustics in the hall are wonderful. Being a horseshoe opera house, mm-hmm. I believe, is a wonderful thing to have.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we do yeah. have. It's a horseshoe. It's okay. A beautiful place.
So now I'll really get out of the way, Brian. You get a couple of minutes to tell us what you want to make sure that we know about that we didn't think about yet.
Well, I think I want to encourage everybody. My sort of goal with this production is to bring to life a very time honored and loved musical, just the way that everybody has probably always dreamed about. We've definitely seen musical theater companies all over the nation produce at Oklahoma and musicals that we're used to at smaller levels. However, I would be surprised if anybody has ever had the opportunity to see a production of Oklahoma at this grand level. When I mean grand level, we're talking about an orchestra of 42, a dance component of about 20, 25, a chorus of about 30, large, expansive two-story sets that are changing all the time, amazing costumes. The entire production is brand new. We're not renting it from anyone. I've got a costume company over on Camp Cuesta that's working day and night to put together costumes. We've got our production company in our set design and prop warehouse. They're building the sets right now, and we're bringing the entire community together. And as you mentioned, the Central Coast Children's Chorus will be involved. They're part of our collaborators, the Civic Ballet San Luis Obispo, with our supervising choreographer Drew Silvaggio. Deo Dances is going to be involved, and of course Ryan's studio at Ryan's American Dance. The production is directed by Edna Garbedian from Fresno, and I'm your conductor. So, I mean, literally, this is going to be an amazing, amazing experience for territory folks of all kinds.
Okay. Very, very good point, and I'm glad you folks have been with us today. This has been delightful. For those of you who are very serious about your opera, I'm sorry if I set a tone to make fun of any of this, but it's I want to remind people that music and entertainment should be enjoyable and should make you smile, even if it's sometimes a serious topic, and Oklahoma is a reasonably light musical. But I think it's great that you guys are doing this, and I'm glad we got a chance to have you all with us today. I want to remind you that next week, in honor of Earth Day, Chris Kington Barker will be here, and she is going to speak with members of an organization called the Slow Foam Free. That's Janine Rands from San Luis Obispo, Lee Perkins from Atascadero, Judith Bernstein from Grover Beach, and they're working with local cities and other communities to reduce the plastic pollution by raising awareness of environmental issues and the responsible way to deal with polystyrene, that's foam packaging, and making that go away. And that should be an interesting program in honor of Earth Day next week. This is Central Coast Voices, as we've said, and I want to remind you this is a production put on in collaboration with KCBX Public Radio, of course, if you're listening there, and Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. You can find our report, which is done every 3 years, on the status of things in San Luis County at actionslo.org. Want to thank once again Joan Gellert Sargent for underwriting this program and her support over the years. You can reach us at KCBX or voices at kcbx.org. Sorry about that. Or give us a call at 543-2323. Thanks to Amy, Brian, James, and Gabriel for being with us today. It's been a wonderful topic. I'm hoping some of my guests will actually speak to me after the program, because I did make fun of most of them in the room. But it's been delightful to be part of this with you. You have a great day. Thanks, Gabe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.